Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Timber Living Log Cabins. For your perfect workspace, living space or hideaway, timberliving.ie.
Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1.
Okay, now for a few recommendations of what to watch on big and small screens this week. We're joined by Rory Cashin, entertainment editor of Joe.ie, and Gráinne Humphreys, director of the Dublin International Film Festival. Good afternoon, guys.
Hiya.
Gráinne, I was shocked to discover that the internet movie review aggregator Rotten Tomatoes is 25 years old. And they have aggregated their aggregations, come up with the 25 best films and best TV shows of all time, allegedly.
They have.
Few surprises there.
A few surprises. I mean, we were just talking about it, actually. I mean, I'm a bit like, you know, the minute somebody puts it to a list, I'm the person who starts pointing out the ones they missed out. And
that's the fun, isn't it?
Remarkably, I was not as annoyed as I actually thought I would have been. I mean, to my mind, one of the lovely things about it is the number of foreign language films. Because for so many years, these top sort of favorite lists from things like IMDb or Rotten Tomatoes do tend towards English language, and you can see it there. Dark Knight is in there, Matrix is in there, some of the kind of bigger kind of crowd pleasing kind of films. But it's lovely to see Parasite, for instance, the Korean film is in there. In the Mood for Love, the wonderful Wong Kar-wai film is also in there. Pan's Labyrinth. So there's a couple of films in there that I genuinely do believe our masterpieces.
Of course, it is based on film critics, like, who are, you know,
but usually,
out of touch with the punters and pick these foreign language.
Sometimes, now, Brenda. But I suppose my point is the movement towards seeing, global industry and international titles is reflected in this list. It wobbles, don't get me wrong, it definitely wobbles, you know, somewhere down
give
the
give me a wobble there.
Well, like, they also do the movie and TV list. So you can actually see they've gone back and kind of reevaluated some of their own ones, because it's not actually a proper aggregation of their previous aggregation.
Okay.
It seems like they've gotten an updated list from all the modern critics and asked, what do you think the best movies and TV shows are of the last 25 years? Okay. So one of them on the TV list is Lost, which I think is at number 7 or number 8, but it actually only has a score of 80% on Rotten Tomatoes, when a lot of the other ones have 90s, 95, 100.
I think Lost was one of those things. We all watched it and got a bit excited at the time, then we moved on and kind of slightly embarrassed at ourselves and petered out. And
I wonder now if Lost, given enough time, will it get some kind of re-evaluation itself?
Really,
because it's... as much as it got very messy, it was kind of a landmark show in that it became something that almost demanded people binge watch.
It was a cultural moment, wasn't it?
To be spoiled in advance. And it had huge budgets, and it had the mystery box thing at the centre of it, and it gave us so many stars and so many producers who are now huge in Hollywood. But yeah, it wasn't reviewed super well at the time.
What were the other big TV shows then they mentioned?
Number one is Breaking Bad, and the rest of the tops The Sopranos, The Wire, Mad Men. Number five, Succession, The Leftovers, Game of Thrones, 6 Feet Under, Fleabag, Ted Lasso. So like...
I think that's the credibility of that list, gone.
Yeah.
Ted Lasso.
It is very definitely aimed around the last 10 years, though, aren't they? It seems like both lists do it in that sense. Do you know what I mean? I mean, they say 25, but it is slightly for the people with shorter memories, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Yeah, okay. The Sopranos and Mad Men, I think, for anyone who hasn't seen them, or even people who have, are definitely too worth going back. And you'd nearly watch them again, wouldn't you?
Absolutely, you would, yeah.
Gráinne, speaking of nostalgia, it's slim pickings in the cinema this week. But The Virgin Suicides, it's got a cinema re-release. Is this a product of the actors' writers' strike or something? Or
I think it's more restoration. I mean, actually, one of the themes, if there is a theme, I suppose, of this week's kind of like lineup, is that archive and kind of looking back at titles. And we've done that with Rotten Tomatoes. But Virgin Suicides is actually 24 years old, which is remarkable. Wow. Actually, probably would have fitted into the Rotten Tomatoes kind of brief,
but it is a kind of a cultural touchstone for
it's a cultural touchstone.
I suppose Generation X people maybe like
and
the book and the film, the soundtrack, the whole thing.
Absolutely, I mean the Jeffrey Eugenides book. It was the first film by Sofia Coppola, set in '70s suburbia, American suburbia, about a family of daughters and the kind of tragedy that unfolds, told by by the boys who lived in the area. So it's like the boys watching the girls. Now, I've sped up the story. The story is a very slow-paced, very lyrical, very dreamy
story. But unsettling.
Very, very unsettling. The parents are James Woods and Kathleen Turner. Kirsten Dunst is, I think, one of her big, big roles, actually. She's incredible in it. But it is a very, what seems nearly as light, nearly superficial, nearly kind of like sort of transparent, and then suddenly has a very, very dark tone to it. Bit like Picnic at Hanging Rock, if you want to throw a comparison at it. But I suppose the other side to it is that you're so right. It didn't do very well when it came out, and then suddenly just grew and grew into this cult.
No.
People, I think, I mean, I was laughing. I was saying to Rory, I thought it was like the anti-Coppola film. You know, everything that was the opposite of what you'd expect a Coppola member to do. You know, a family story in which it kind of unfolds or implodes. But genuinely, now if you look back, Sofia Coppola's new film is actually going to be in Toronto or in Venice. It's on Priscilla Presley. It's so in tune with the kinds of films that she makes. These, again, very dreamy, very opaque stories, focusing on a kind of small group and the interactions. I mean, an astonishing debut film.
Absolutely.
And well worth going back to.
I would go back and watch that in the cinema again for sure, because it is a sensual experience.
The soundtrack, the Air soundtrack, is to die for.
Yeah, absolutely. Rory, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Mutant Mayhem is the other big release.
Yeah, very easy segue there.
Sensual experience.
Not exactly, but having walked out of it, I think that the people behind this...
When you say you walked out of it, no, you walked out of it when it was over, yeah?
When it was over, yes. Thank you for that clarification. Yeah. But I think the producers behind it were thinking, right, we see what Spider-Verse did for Spider-Man. We're going to try and do that for the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And I think they have succeeded. It is beautifully animated. It looks completely different to what you might expect. Okay. I was going in anticipating maybe like a Pixar ripoff or something along those lines. And instead it's this like gorgeous hand-drawn, kind of messy looking animation that is quite unlike anything else I've seen in the big screen recently. It has a score by Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross, so the music's out of control good. And when it's not that music, it has a soundtrack that's all 90s R&B hip hop. Again, amazing. Incredible voice cast and a really kind of poignant, powerful message at the center of it about, you know, not feeling like you're part of a family until you find your own family. A very kind of found family idea at the center of it. And very, very funny, because Seth Rogen is a co-writer on it and a co-producer on it.
Okay.
And he brought in his This Is The End and the guy who he did The Boys with as a co-producer and a co-writer. And it's brilliant. I thought it was fantastic.
Wow, okay. I'm gobsmacked. Right. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Mutant Mayhem. Go to TV, Grainne. The Seven Ages of Noel Brown is an Alan Gilson documentary tomorrow night on RT1 at 9:35, which... I hadn't kind of really been aware of it, but I'd imagine this would be
this is something really special.
People.
And I mean, I mentioned archives, but I feel like, I mean, Alan Gilson and Martin Mann in Yellow Simon have made some incredible portraits of kind of Irish thinkers. They're a really wonderful production company. And I think one of the things that's really interesting is the different approach and the kind of freshness and vitality they bring to, you know, essentially kind of portraits or biographies. So this is a film which effectively has been created out of an interview that was done by a screenwriter called James Black in 1997, just before Noel Brown died. And so what Alan and Martin, and I have to give a shout out to Vanessa Gilday, who did the archive, have done is kind of use that to kind of give you a wonderful exploration of kind of the times in which he lived, and to take you back to his early childhood, which sounded hellish, his move to London, and how all of that really informed the doctor and then the politician and the man who tried to get the mother and child, you know, policy through, and all of these kind of like, I suppose, cultural kind of like elements that if you like, informed and created this man who had such a kind of deep love for Ireland and for his ability to stay on principle. So it's a really beautiful film about a stubborn politician who stuck.
Well, Brezzy's talking about Sinead O'Connor being a punk earlier.
Yeah.
Like, he was Noel Brown, probably another great punk of Ireland.
Beautifully made.
Yeah.
Beautifully made.
So that's tomorrow night, 9:35, RTE1. Rory, they cloned Tyrone on Netflix. You like this, yeah?
I did. It was kind of the middle ground between the big sci-fi of Jordan Peele and the very specific weird comedy of Boots Riley. It has John Boyega and Jamie Foxx. Jamie Foxx steals every single scene that he's in. And then Teyonah Parris, who people might know from some Marvel movies. Again, that trio is... It's fun, like the charisma on screen is unparalleled. I haven't found people that funny together
really
in so long.
And I haven't seen something good on Netflix in ages. So this is maybe their
most unique and best original movie that they've done in a while. In like the last maybe 2 or 3 years, I have to go back. Like beyond the kind of the Oscar-y stuff, this is more just plain entertainment. And it has to do with three criminals who realize that they have been cloned and they're not entirely sure why. And there's a big, vast US conspiracy at the center of it all. It is very funny. It leans into the blaxploitation idea of like the 70s filmmaking. There's actual cigar burns on some of the reels as the films are going by. Okay. So it looks a bit Tarantino-y as well.
Yeah.
But it's very funny, and it has, again, it's got that Jordan Peele sensibility of
brilliant
putting sci-fi and horror through a different lens that you might not be expecting.
Okay, great. They Clone Tyrone, that's on Netflix now. Grania, 15 Love on Prime Video has Aidan Turner from Poldark.
This is brilliant. Again, I feel like surprised. Yeah, it felt like it kind of crept in the kind of summer months. So I was obsessed, I know other people were, with Wimbledon and Alcaraz's great victory in the final over Djokovic. But in the middle of that, there was this wonderful kind of game where I think there was like 15 or 20 juices back and forth and back and forth, one moving ahead. And it was only about halfway through this, and it's only, I think, a 6-part series, where I realised that this is how it's structured. So it's about a protege, a tennis player, and her dynamic relationship with her coach. She has a very bad accident. It effectively ends her career. And 3 years later, they meet. And she makes quite kind of strong sort of complaints about him and his behaviour, and it all unravels. And it's done against this wonderful backdrop of a kind of tennis camp with Anna Chancellor from Four Weddings and a Funeral. So it's glamorous people playing tennis, beautiful sunshine, but brilliantly plotted. It's a cat and mouse between a tennis coach and his protege. And they literally, as I said, edge past each other, who's going to beat who. 6 parts. It's on Amazon Prime, and it's brilliant.
Okay, that's 15 Love. So people are getting a few things here now for the dog days of summer when there's nothing new around. Rory, I want to ask you, selfish reasons for asking you about From, which is on Sky Now TV as well, because I saw it on your list. So I kind of started having a look at it and going, oh, this is rubbish. And then I found out I was watching a second one, and it's actually, it's good rubbish, isn't it?
It's good
or no. Should I quit while I'm ahead now? Because this is what I'm more, do I want to invest further in this, or does it go anywhere?
I'm a horror fan anyway, and this felt like if Lost was written by Stephen King.
Yes.
For anyone who doesn't know, the plot is essentially people arrive in a town and they suddenly realise that there's no way to get out. And at night time, there are vampiric monsters appear and feed on them all. And they don't know why they're there. Hopefully, it's not going to end the way Lost did, with this kind of, here's your ending and I hope you're happy with it kind of idea. It does feel like it's building towards something.
Okay.
I appreciate that there seems to be a bit more going on behind it than what initially appears.
Okay, so I'm only at the start of season one, so season two is out now. Yeah.
So all of season one came weekly last year.
Okay,
like exactly this time last year, but all of season two has dropped in one go on now, and I think it's showing weekly on Sky Sci-Fi.
Should I stick with it for a kind of a downtime undemanding watch?
I think so. Yeah. Okay. I think it does generally episode on episode build upon itself and get better.
Yeah, it's enjoyable. Grania, BBC Two. We'll just do this quickly. Tonight at 11, some early Christopher Nolan for people.
Back when he did short films. Yeah, Memento. I mean, I have a huge spot for Memento, I have to say. I thought Guy Pearce was wonderful. Carrie Moss, just a really clever... the way in which he uses time, the story, the idea that this guy has all these messages tattooed on him that allow him to kind of read his life. So clever, brilliantly done. And to my mind, in a way, I kind of think, you know, God, Christopher Nolan, maybe he just peaked too early. And yeah. It's not to take away from Oppenheimer, which is, you know, was a really, really great and interesting film. But it's just to say that the way that he could do it then on these small scales and pack in the information. And also, I just love the casting, like with Killian and Oppenheimer. He's really good at casting when he actually, you know, Guy Pearce, you know, at that stage.
Unlikely.
But really interesting and well worth, I think, well worth a second watch.
Rory, let's see if we can make it a hat trick of new shows for people that they might get. Mm-hmm. Paramount Plus, Special Ops Line. It's a good looking cast. Is it worth a go?
I've only seen the first two episodes, and the third one I think drops today. So every new episode's on Paramount Plus every Sunday. And from the first two, I thought it was tremendous. I read other reviews and people weren't feeling it, and I didn't understand why. It's from Taylor Sheridan, who previously wrote Sicario and has Yellowstone, which is like officially the biggest show on television right now.
Is it? Yeah.
This one feels much closer to Sicario. It deals with the Lioness program, where they bring in some of the best in the US Army into a special CIA mission, where they pair them off against the girlfriends or wives of some of the biggest terrorists or targets around the world, and you try to use that as a backdoor to get in. So the cast is Zoe Saldana, Nicole Kidman, Morgan Freeman. It's stacked, and the action sequences are huge.
Charlie's Angels.
Special Ops Lioness and Paramount.
But very
Plus.
Serious Charlie's Angels.
Grani, you've 30 seconds to tell us about, you're going off to the Venice Film Festival. They're going big on Cancelled Men this year at Venice, aren't they?
They are, but they always do, Brendan. That's the thing about
the
Venice.
The Europeans, they're so tolerant.
Cannes didn't take them, so I think Venice did. No, I mean, to my mind, what I'm really excited about, Maestro is going to be there, the Bradley Cooper. Yorgos Lanthimos is going to be there.
Maestro is about...
Leonard Bernstein.
Okay.
The Killer, which is the new film with Fassbender, David Fincher. Sofia Coppola's there with Priscilla Presley. In the Land of Saints and Sinners, Liam Neeson, Kerry Condon, they've got a new film there. And I just think it's just going to be absolutely fantastic.
So strikes aside, there's plenty of movies in the can ready.
They won't have their
cast,
Brendan.
Like,
But the films will still be there, and I'm sure.
And they are going to put them out, are they?
They're going to be out there. They'll be out there to start their Oscar campaign. Then this will be their launch pad, and then you might see some of them in Toronto. Some of them will go to London, and then they'll space out. I mean, some of them have been moved. You know, Challengers was meant to be there, the Zendaya Timothée Chalamet film, but that's now gone. I think move to the first half of next year.
Okay.
So they're still moving things around,
but
the films will be there. And let's be honest, the films is the reason that we go. Do you know what I mean? The stars is the reason that the press go. So
yeah, okay. I like that you don't regard yourself as a member of the press.
I'm a film lover. Well, I have to get them for Diff next year. That's my job.
Okay, Grainne Humphreys, Rory Cashin, thank you very much.